Catholic Order of Foresters, dedicated to bringing Catholic values to life since 1883. Catholic Order of Foresters is looking to hire relevant radio listeners as new agents in each of our markets. For more information, call Mark at 800-552-0145.
The following is a relevant radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
Talk radio for Catholic life to start your day. It's Morning Air on Relevant Radio. Hosting this morning, Glenn Leverins.
And if you caught the end of Neil's newscast there, you'll notice that, yes, lack of sleep will age your brain. I have a very old brain, very, very old brain, and gray hair, too. So it's lack of sleep. That's what it is. We're going to keep you awake this hour. If you're waking up, just joining us, welcome aboard. Happy to have you along. We'll play three questions. Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk movies with Vince Leo, talking about Transformer and more. We'll talk with Hollywood director, who's a Christian, Scott Derrickson. But right now, we're going to do a little traveling with Diana Von Glahn. It's The Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land, TV series exploring Catholic places, a pilgrimage around the world. Diana Von Glahn explains the art, architecture, history, and doctrine behind some of the breathtaking cathedrals and shrines and other places of pilgrimage. Diana and David Von Glahn will take you on a pilgrimage of a lifetime, showing you the sacred sites of the Holy Land, a trip you'll never forget and you'll want to take again and again. You can see it on DVD, The Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land. A two-DVD set features all six 30-minute episodes and some extra features as well. In the first season of The Faithful Traveler, they visited cathedrals, shrines, and other places of pilgrimage in the U.S., talking about the Holy Land a little bit as we start off. Good morning, Diana.
Hi, Glenn. That was very thorough.
Well, I'm a good reader sometimes here. But anyway, hey, I understand that you just got back from the Middle East, and you were there when the Holy Father was there.
I was. We were blessed to have been invited by the Israel Ministry of Tourism to come out and film a new program about the Holy Father's pilgrimage to the Holy Land.
Wow, that had to be exciting. And give us a little taste of what it was like with just the crowds and just the overall feeling of the Holy Father being right there in the Holy Land.
Yeah, well, we were there for 2 weeks. The Holy Father was there for 3 days. So we were there a little bit, maybe about a week before he was there and then a week after. And the days that he wasn't, like the days leading up to his visit, we were mostly in Jordan. As you may recall, he started his trip in Jordan, and everybody was so excited. I mean, there was everybody. It didn't matter what religion they were or what nationality they were just excited that the Pope was coming. I think that they just felt honored that he would come to visit them, and especially Jordan, because, you know, the Jordan Tourism Board also had us come and visit out there, and I think that Jordan felt very special because I think a lot of times they're overlooked when people think about going to the Holy Land. But, you know, for those of us who recall, you know, there's a lot of what happened in the Old Testament that started out in Jordan. You know, St. John the Baptist was out there. Moses was out there. And so the Holy Father, like his predecessors, started his pilgrimage in Jordan. So they were excited. When the Holy Father was in the Holy Land, it was complete insanity. I think that the Holy Father didn't want to ride in, you know, an armored vehicle. And as you know, they're very tight with security in Israel and in other parts of the Holy Land. And so they were very cautious about how close they allowed him to get to people. So, for instance, I remember, you know, we were blessed to attend the Mass in Bethlehem, which is in the Palestinian territories, and that was just amazing. The security was intense. There were, I remember seeing snipers up on all of the buildings. I mean, they were watching this series like a hawk. And then when we were in Jerusalem, we were able to attend the meeting between President Shimon Peres and the Holy Father at the home of the president. All the streets of Jerusalem were blocked off, well, a good majority of them. You know, and I remember we were supposed to be driving to the president's house, and we couldn't because all the streets were blocked. And so we ended up having to get out and walk. And, you know, here I am in, like, this full-length black dress, and my hair is blow-dried, and the Israeli sun is beating down on us, and I'm just getting crankier by the minute because I'm thinking I'm going to look horrible by the time I get there. And so then we couldn't find our way, you know. So I stopped this Israeli soldier, and I say, "Where is the president's house?" And he says, "I don't know." And I was like, "I know where my president lives. Why don't you know where yours does?" You know. So then, you know, by the grace of God, we end up seeing this guy who he's just kind of sauntering down the street, and he's wearing a suit, very handsome man. And so one of my cameramen starts talking to him, and I guess he asked him, you know, where the president's house was, and this man happened to be going there. So fortunately, you know, he spoke Hebrew, and so he was talking to some of the people on the street. Well, he ended up being the mayor of Tiberias. And so we're like, great, you know, we found our way from the mayor of Tiberias. He walked us to the house of Shimon Peres, you know, so it was just kind of like just a really crazy experience where, you know, there's just this conflagration of all these, you know, horrible and yet exciting and unbelievable events at the same time.
Well, a true Holy Land experience, like in the time of Christ, where you're walking to all these famous places. You're just walking because they're just a few blocks down the road there.
But, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. We're talking with Diana von Glahn, Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land, the TV series she's part of. We're talking about the Holy Father's recent trip to the Middle East, which was smack in the middle of Diana's last time there. For as much traveling as you've done and as much of the Holy Land as you've seen in depth in order to be able to talk about it and broadcast about it, does it ever get old? I would think, and I haven't been there ever, but that it would just be amazing to you kind of pinch yourself that, wow, I'm really here, huh?
It is. It is. Well, first of all, I mean, there are a great many places to go. And, you know, I'm still trying to get over the fact that I've been there once, let alone twice. You know, it is very surreal. It is one of the most magical places that I've ever been. I mean, I've been a lot of places, and I don't think that there's ever been a country or a land that has taken, you know, like I was telling a nun that I met out there recently, I said, every time I go, I feel like I leave a little bit of my heart when I'm there, you know, you know, I've gone twice, so the more I go, I'm going to have to be a little careful. Pretty soon I'm just going to move there, you know, because it's amazing. But, you know, the thing is that every time you go, there's something new that you experience. And so I don't know that it ever gets old. I mean, I was looking the other day, I guess Steve Ray, who is another, you know, Catholic traveler, he's been more than 100 times. I can't imagine what that would be like. You know, I don't think I've been anywhere more than 100 times. So, you know, but I guess he's, you know, that familiar with it. But, I, you know,
yeah,
I'm
he goes jogging. He's just, it's,
you know,
his,
right?
It's his neighborhood, you know, no biggie. Yeah.
No, I'm still, you know, I'm still exploring. Still excited about it, and, you know, it's new for me.
What if there was one spot there that was the most moving for you, what would you say that would be?
Well, you know, that changes every time. I mean, I remember the first time that I was there, that was the Sea of Galilee. You know, we did what a lot of pilgrims do when they go to the Sea of Galilee, which is Tiberias, where our mayor friend is from. And, you know, we went out on a boat, and we were out there, and it was very misty, and it was a wonderful experience. Easy to imagine what the disciples felt or what their life was like when they were out fishing, or what it was like when, you know, Jesus was walking on the water towards them. That was amazing. This time around, you know, it varied. I mean, we got to spend a good amount of time in front of the Rock of Calvary. We were filming there for about, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes. And normally people just kind of go in and they venerate the rock and then they go, because there's always this huge line. But, you know, because we were filming and we had the permission to film and spend time there, we got to, and it was really unreal, you know, just kind of standing there and, you know, just thinking what happened on that rock, you know, more than 2,000 years ago. It was very unreal. Yeah. I mean, I keep using that word, you know, but it's hard to wrap your mind around what is in the Holy Land. And it's a wonderful experience.
I believe that's a great description. If you have questions about traveling in the Holy Land, give us a call. Diana von Glahn is with us, 877-766-3777, 877-766-3777. We'll learn more about the faithful traveler in the Holy Land when Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio.
The Fortnight for Freedom is underway. Please join us now in this prayer for our nation.
O God, our Creator, from your provident hand we have received our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You've given us the right and duty to worship you, the only true God, and your Son, Jesus Christ.
Through the power and working of your Holy Spirit, you call us to bring the light and the saving truth of the gospel to every corner of society.
We ask you to bless us in our vigilance for the gift of religious liberty. Give us courage in making our voices heard on behalf of the rights of your church and the freedom of conscience of all people of faith.
Grant, we pray, O Heavenly Father, a clear and united voice to all your sons and daughters gathered in your church in this decisive hour in the history of our nation, so that this great land will always be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Keeping you plugged in.
Plugged in to the latest news and the issues of the day.
The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
We got a lot to talk about. This will be a fun hour. I'm going to open the phones as I do every day to you.
Talk radio for Catholic life.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Always looking at some aspect of life you won't find anywhere else. We look at life through the eyes of faith.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Hey, I hope you enjoy the show. I hope you tune in every day. I'm on 2 to 5 Central, 3 to 6 Eastern.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
See, if you're looking for some inspirational Catholic reading this summer, may we suggest Father Rocky's Marriage Insurance Book and Memorare Book. They're available on the Relevant Radio online store for only $24.95. That's a 17% discount off the original price for both books. Go to relevantradio.com, click on the About Us tab, and select Relevant Radio Store. Tomorrow, in this very same time slot, we're going to talk about some faith steps that military families can take. As for today, lots still to come. We'll play three questions in about 15 minutes. Scott Derrickson is a Christian Hollywood movie director. He's on the way this hour, and we'll talk movies as well from the reviewer point of view with Vince Leo. That's all on the way. But back to our travels with the faithful traveler in the Holy Land, Diana von Glahn. You know, Diana, many broadcasters, they think if they ever win the lottery, well, they're either going to buy a radio station, or so many would say, I would love to be able to host a travel show. That looks like so much fun. You can travel the world and you get to talk about it. And I imagine there are some hardships that go along with it, as you mentioned, kind of, you know, maybe being dressed for TV, but yet in a climate where, you know, it's hot and dusty and hot.
Right. Yeah. Well, you do need to win the lottery to produce a television show. I play regularly. It is quite expensive. And you know, that is quite frequently the biggest hurdle that we have to deal with. Season to season, we're just kind of like, you know, I don't know, are we going to do another season? Is there going to be some way for us to produce it? And, you know, many of our fans on Facebook and people who have been reading my blog for years know that my husband and I have full-time jobs. So we actually, that's how we produce the show, is we pay for it ourselves. It's only been recently that we have been getting sponsorships. It started off with Select International Tours, which is a tour company that they were organizing a pilgrimage for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia when Cardinal Regali was our Archbishop, and they were going to the Holy Land, and they wanted somebody to film like kind of a commercial for them, and they came to us, and I said, you know, I don't do that, but what I do is a television show, and if you want, you know, we can kind of, you know, put our wits together, our minds together, and see if we can create this. And that is what resulted was the Holy Land series, which, you know, you mentioned is available on DVD. It's also available online. We recently posted the entire series up online. It's up on YouTube, and actually if you go to our website, which is www.thefaithfultraveler.com, right on the first page, right on the home page, you'll see a link that says watch our show, and that will take you to links of all of the episodes. And the reason that we did that was because we, you know, granted, we're not making any money off of this, you know, but our main goal is to show that, like, this is our way of evangelizing. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I always figured that, I love the beautiful things that our church has to offer, Some of the beautiful things are churches and shrines and places of pilgrimage, whether they be here in the United States, like what we covered in our first series, or whether they be abroad, like in the Holy Land or like in Europe. And my thought is that if I can show people what our faith is all about in the different aspects, whether it be through the saints or through the lives of Jesus or His Blessed Mother, then I figure if I can just bring them there, God will take care of it from there. So my main goal is to get people to at least just watch it. And if they don't know that it exists, then they're not going to be watching it. So that's why we put it up online for people to watch.
Now, for our audience, it doesn't take much persuasion to think that would be awesome to go on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. You get to hear about it a lot on Relevant Radio. People taking trips. Steve Ray, you mentioned earlier, is there, every other week, it seems, and he's telling us about it. And so people want to go, but how do we get people over the hump from that desire to making that maybe a once-in-a-lifetime trip?
Well, we actually just started planning our own pilgrimages. So, and you can go on our website and find out about, we're planning a trip in April of 2015. We're also planning one in October, which we haven't posted yet. But I think that's going to be focused on women. But, that said, I think people need to kind of reevaluate how they think about these things. And first of all, let me say, I know that travel abroad is expensive. I mean, part of the reason why we created the first series was to tell people, look, you want to go on pilgrimage, you don't have to go abroad. You can go here in the United States. That said, we Americans regularly spend our money on things that, would not be as valuable to us as a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, I think that's something that really hit home for me this last time around, because I really had a wonderful opportunity to meet a lot of the people who live in the Holy Land. And it occurred to me that, in fact, one friend of mine who is originally born in Bethlehem and he no longer lives there, he's one of many Christians who have left the Holy Land. He said to me the other day, he said, Diana, what is the Holy Land, what is the land of Christ going to be like when there are no longer Christians living in the Holy Land? And I thought, wow, that's horrible. That's a horrible thought, that there would no longer be Christians living in the Holy Land. And, the people that I met when I was out there, the Christians that I met when I was out there, what they're doing is they're struggling to find a way of life. And so people are the way that people are, all around the world. I mean, the Israelis, everybody looks out for their own. The Jews, they support one another very well. They're really great about supporting one another. The Muslims are also great about supporting one another. The Christians are having a hard time out there because they are in the extreme minority, and they need support from us, because we are the only ones who can support them, because they're not getting support out there. And the way that we can support them is by going to visit, because the good majority of them survive through the income that they make from tourists. And if tourists no longer come because they're afraid, or because, they would rather go to, somewhere in Italy or something like that, then, what's going to happen with these Christians? They're going to have to move to where there is a place where they can live. And then, the numbers of the Christians are going to dwindle to the point where there are no more Christians in the Holy Land. And then what are we going to do? So I think if we turn our minds away from, oh gosh, it's expensive, oh gosh, it's not safe. Let me tell you, I've been twice, and I know, recently there's all this stuff going on with the kids that were recently killed. But, for the most part, it is safe there, and people want you to come visit. Of every religion, they want you to come visit, because we are supporting them by our funds, by traveling out there.
Talking traveling, talking pilgrimages, the Holy Land, and more with Diana von Glahn this morning at 877-766-3777. Roy in Chicago. Roy in Chicago has a question. Go ahead, Roy.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. See, I have a question regarding a trip over to the Holy Land. I know several people in their 80s and early 90s that are in excellent physical health. Maybe a few of them could use a wheelchair once in a great while, but they are in good health. My question is, are there any groups designed for that age group that could go on a tour to the Holy Land?
That's a really good question. And let me just say, when we were in the Holy Land with Select International the first time around, there are about 200 pilgrims, and a good majority of them were older. And, you know, I find that a lot of people tend to save it for you know, and I think a lot of the reason is, you know, they're not having to deal with the kids, you know, they're retired, they have the time, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But the first comment that you made about them being in a good physical sense, I mean, definitely there is a lot of walking that is involved in a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. So, you know, being in the being able to walk those kinds of day, those kinds of hours are is important. That said, you know, I'm sure that, you know, if you were to call Select International, like if you, you know, there are any number of things that a tour operator can do to customize a trip for you. So for instance, you know, if I, at my parish, if I had a whole bunch of people like a prayer group and we were all, you know, some of us couldn't walk very fast or whatever, you know, you call somebody like Select International and say, listen, can you customize a tour for us that will match our physical needs? And that's possible. Absolutely, that's possible. I mean, it might not include all of the things that a more fast-paced tour would, but it would meet your needs. So yes, anything is possible.
Okay, so that would, that's Select, S-E-L-E-C-K-R-T, Select International?
Oh yeah, yeah, Select International. If you go on my website, we have links to them all over the place. So, and they're, you know, they're run by real conscientious people, you know, fantastic people, and, you know, just tell them that I sent you.
Okay.
And they'll be like, okay, what can we do for you? So, yeah. But, you know, that's the great thing about all of these tour operators. You know, they essentially what they want to do is they want to share these places with you as well. And so whatever they can do to customize the trip for you, I'm sure they'll be happy to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Roy, in Chicago, and 877-766-3777, the number to get a hold of us talking traveling and pilgrimages in the Holy Land. Diana Von Glahn from the Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land is our guest this morning. Ronald in Chicago has a question. Go ahead, Ronald.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding the traveling in Israel, Jerusalem, like that. Is it safe, like, because I travel all over Europe by myself like that. Is it doable in Israel? Or I have to join a tour?
I'm sorry, what was that last bit?
Should I join a tour with groups like that, or could I do it by myself, like going places by myself, walking around like that?
You know, I think it really just depends on what kind of traveler you are. If you are brave and, you know, not afraid of being in a country where you don't speak the language, you know, then, yeah, you could do it by yourself. I mean, Father James Martin's recent book, Jesus the Pilgrimage, where he talks about how he went by himself. He didn't join a group. That said, you know, when I was there recently, it was funny. We were walking around Jerusalem at night, and we were trying to find a place to eat. This was me and my camera people, and all of the signs were in Hebrew. Mm-hmm. And one of my cameramen said, wow, now I know what it feels like to be illiterate, because we could not read these signs. I mean, none of us spoke Hebrew. Mm-hmm. So it was a little frustrating in that sense. You know, like I said, I think it depends on what you like and what you're comfortable with.
Okay.
If you are comfortable with not knowing and kind of being a little bit more, explorational, then yeah, you can go by yourself.
Okay. Especially now with the iPhone, it's easier. I can translate as anything if I launch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been twice. Well, the first time I was with the group, and the second time we were provided guides, and I found the guides to be extremely valuable. You know, now I don't know that I would go to, for instance, in Spain where I speak the language, but, you know, at the same time, it's always nice to get somebody else's information. So it really depends on just what you're looking for.
Okay.
But yeah, let me just say something about the safeness. You know, I've been twice. You know, I know many people who have been multiple times. I know people who live there. And, you know, we Americans have to realize that what we see is what the news chooses to show us. And the news chooses to show us sensational and violent. And it's not always sensational and violent out there. So, you know, that's just something for people to remember.
Diana Von Glahn, the Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land. Find out more at thefaithfultraveler.com. Thanks for your time this morning. It's been wonderful, and happy and safe travels to you.
Thanks so much, Glenn. I really appreciate it.
Three questions coming up next. If you'd like to play, join us at 877-766-3777. A fabulous prize awaits, plus a fabulous time. You're going to be on the radio. We'll make fun of you a little bit. Nah, not really. There's free hints. You're a guaranteed winner. Step right up at 877-766-3777. Then we'll talk movies. Scott Derrickson, the director, is along, and also movie reviews with Vince Leo coming up. First of three questions. Call us and play next at Morning Air here on Relevant Radio.
Meeting someone with similar values and interests is one of the benefits of using CatholicMatch.com. Go deeper with your faith, and you may start a new chapter in your life like Sarah.
My roommates encouraged me to try Catholic Match because they knew how much my faith meant to me, and so I did.
Is it time you try Catholic Match?
If I wanted to get myself out there, I needed to be proactive about it. I love theology. I love thinking about it. I love writing about it. But immediately when I met Andy and we started communicating by email and by phone and then met up for coffee, he too had that same love, and I think we both knew that that was safe grounds to talk on because we were both on Catholic Match.
New friends or your spouse may be close by. Andy and Sarah were in the same city but may never have met without Catholic Match.
I'm tremendously grateful for Catholic Match. I think more and more people are hearing of couples that met online. Oh, it can happen, and it happened to you. So I've been surprised by the very positive response.
Visit CatholicMatch.com/Drew for a special offer.
It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't...
I don't know about you. I'm so sick of yelling and screaming. I was jumping from station to station. Everybody venting and screaming about something, you know? It's also negative. And then I thought about Relevant.
Relevant Radio.
And the sound is so different. I mean, it really is. It's hopeful. And we do something else. My show addresses the current events, the news and the issues of the day. But I always try to look at those issues through the eyes of faith. What moral lessons can we learn? How can we change the culture? How can we personally grow in virtue and fulfill the great mission that God has set before us? So tell others about it. You can have your friends listen to the station you're listening to or download our mobile app.
Bringing the drive alive.
I'm on every day, 2 to 5 Central, 3 to 6 Eastern.
Drew Mariani.
Follow me on Twitter. The handle is Drew Mariani Show. Of course, Facebook.com, The Drew Mariani Show.
Weekdays at 2 Central on Talk Radio for Catholic Life. Relevant Radio.
It is important that all of us are out there trying to defend these basic human values and basic moral values, whether it's about human life and abortion and euthanasia or stem cell research or the whole battle now over the definition of holy matrimony.
The Most Reverend Thomas J. Tobin, Bishop of Providence.
Some people will agree with us. Some people will disagree with us. But if we don't speak up, then we're not fulfilling our obligations as Christians, as Catholics, as religious leaders. As I've said before, I was not ordained to be irrelevant. And as Christians and as Catholics, we were not baptized to be irrelevant either. We have to be involved in the battle. I think that's what Jesus meant when he called us to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. And again, sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but it's very important that we be faithful.
This is Relevant Radio.
We're being bludgeoned with all of these things that are counter to church teaching. And we have to admit that there are a lot of people who just get tired of the fight and have given up. Mm-hmm. But when we do that, we walk away from the true practice of our faith. And we have to be very cognizant of that and not do that.
We got to get out there. And that takes a supernatural strength. You know, we can't do that in our own power. We need God's power to do that.
Keeping you energized to evangelize. Talk Radio for Catholic Life. Relevant Radio.
Hi, I'm Sheila Logvinas, always encouraging you to seek out the best news sources for accurate, fair, and well-rounded information about the breaking news and top issues of the day. All the better when analyzed through the lens of the Catholic faith, which applies the natural law and moral order, teachings and traditions of the faith, encouraging critical thinking skills in the great Catholic intellectual tradition. A closer look brings in the best guests out there on these issues, from leaders in the church to leaders in government and academia. And we'll again today at 5.
I'm Paul Sadek, and here's a relevant saint for today, July 2nd, St. Bernardino Realeno. St. Bernardino was born into a noble family in Italy in 1530. He became a lawyer, but when he realized that he had a religious vocation, he joined the Society of Jesus. St. Bernardino was sent to Lecce, where he remained for the last 42 years of his life. He was a model confessor, a powerful preacher, a diligent teacher of the faith to the young, a dedicated shepherd of souls. He was so beloved by the city of Lecce that the city's magistrates asked him on his deathbed to take the city under his protection. St. Bernardino bowed his head and died with the names of Jesus and Mary on his lips in 1616. There's more. Join me as we pray with the whole church, including the saints and angels, every morning on Daybreak at 5 a.m. Central, 6 a.m. Eastern, here on Relevant Radio.
Sure, play accordion music with the accordion guy. All this polka business here. Well, the silliness fits perfectly with three questions here on Morning Air on Relevant Radio. I'm Glenn Leverins, happy to be joined later this hour by Vince Leo, talking movies. We'll look at Transformers and the like. Scott Derrickson, Hollywood director, is on with us as well. But now, our very first and most importantest guest right now is Mel from North Aurora, Illinois. Good morning, Mel.
Good morning.
How are you this fine day?
I'm doing so good. Nice sunny day. Storms moved out, so it's good.
All right. You all set for a big holiday weekend, 3 days off and all?
I sure am.
Very good. Very good. Fireworks, picnics, stuff like that in the works?
Nothing really planned. Just going to see how everything comes together with the extended weekend.
Hey, Mel, let me share with you here something that I used to tease coworkers about. From my vantage point, I've got four big windows out of the studio, and there was a blue jay, but it looked about as big as a football helmet on the tree right outside the window, partaking in the show this morning. And so that's not related to anything, but, boy, that was kind of odd. Anyway, hey, what we have for you, Mel, is a prize just for playing today. You're a guaranteed winner. We've got the book from Kurt Kuntz. It's his story of walking the Camino, about 400 miles worth in Spain. It's called A Million Steps. That's yours for playing. We've got the hints as well. So you're going to have a great time as a guaranteed winner. Are you ready to go with number one, Mel?
Sure am.
In today's gospel reading from Matthew, Jesus casts out demons. Where does he send them? Does he send them A, to hell, B, into a herd of pigs, or C, to their room?
I would have to say B, to a herd of
Excellent.
Pigs.
Excellent job, Melhead. You needed the hint. With this hint, another rhyme we be making. Get this right by keeping in mind bacon. The demons pleaded with him, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of swine." And he said to them, "Go then." They came out, entered the swine, and the whole herd rushed down a steep bank into the sea where they drowned. Kind of an unusual story, but nonetheless, something that transpired about 2,000 years ago. Question number two, also from the gospel reading today. When the townsfolk saw what Jesus had done, A, they rejoiced, B, they were afraid, or C, they asked him to leave.
I think I need a hint on that one. I believe
certainly, Mel. All right, we got it for you here. Roses are red. You get them at the store. After the incident, they wanted Jesus no more.
See,
it is. They asked him to leave. Thereupon, the whole town came out to meet Jesus, but when they saw him, they begged him to leave their district. You know, it was tough on the swine herds there. Now, in the territory of Gadarens, where this took place, there was sure to be a shortage of bacon, but not so in the average U.S. household. What percentage of American kitchens, Mel, always have bacon on hand? 25%, 53%, or 97%?
Ooh, I'd like to get a hint on that one as well.
All right, my bacon-eating friend. Rhymes about pigs can sometimes make us laugh, but our correct answer is just over half.
That would be B.
Bacon, the most beautiful thing on earth.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Bought some last night, as a matter of fact, to go with the 4th of July weekend barbecue activities. 53% of American kitchens have bacon always on hand, according to the Council of People Who Keep Track of Such Things Like That and Eat a Lot of Bacon. Well, Mel, you've been a wonderful contestant. Thanks for playing along today. We have the Kurt Kuntz book, A Million Steps, headed out your way as well. So great job and enjoy the 4th.
Hey, same to you. Thank you all so much, and God bless.
All right, you are welcome. And that wraps up three questions for us today. Catholic Order of Foresters, dedicated to bringing Catholic values to life since 1883. Catholic Order of Foresters, looking to hire Relevant Radio listeners as new agents in each of our markets. For more information, call Mark at 855-696-2085. More of Morning Air. We'll talk with Hollywood director and Catholic Scott Derrickson. That's next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio.
Bacon's the best. Even the frying of bacon sounds like applause. It's like, yay, bacon! You want to know how good bacon is? To improve other food, they wrap it in bacon. If it weren't for bacon, we wouldn't even know what a water chestnut is.
Thank you, bacon. Sincerely, Water Chestnut III.
Please join me now in a prayer to the powerful intercessor, St. Joseph. O St. Joseph, whose protection is so great, so strong, and so prompt before the throne of God, I place in you all of my interests and desires. O St. Joseph, do assist me by your powerful intercession, and obtain for me from your divine Son all spiritual blessings through Jesus Christ our Lord, so that having engaged here below your heavenly power, I may offer my thanksgiving and homage to the most loving of fathers. O St. Joseph, I never weary contemplating you or Jesus asleep in your arms. I dare not approach while he reposes near your heart. Press him in my name and kiss his fine head for me and ask him to return the kiss when I draw my dying breath. St. Joseph, patron of departing souls, please pray for us. For more information on St. Joseph, please go to relevantradio.com, keyword Joseph.
Hi, I'm Wendy Weiss. Dr. Peter Kleponis has a brand new book soon to be published about the Catholic response to the pornography epidemic. He'll give us an exclusive preview on Wednesday at 1 Central on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com. Don't miss it, and please join in this important conversation at 1 Central Wednesday on Relevant Radio.
On call, weekdays at 1 Central, 2 p.m. Eastern on Relevant Radio.
Hollywood director Scott Derrickson is with us on Morning Air, and he signed on to make a new Marvel superhero movie, but he's also a strong man of faith. He's got a degree from Biola University and a long history of helping fellow Christians succeed in Hollywood. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Hey, what's it like? Any special challenges for being Christian in Hollywood?
I mean, there's special challenges to being Christian everywhere.
That's you know? True. That's true.
I don't know that that Hollywood is any particularly more or less difficult than any other workplace. They all have their unique challenges, I suppose.
How has your faith influenced some of your filmmaking?
Well, I mean, you know, I certainly take my faith very seriously, and I'm also a student of theology and religious philosophy, and always have been very interested in that. So the stories I tell, the movies I work on, they usually are coming from some kind of vested interest in the spiritual and certainly in morality. You know, I don't think I've ever made a movie that didn't have a pretty serious moral point of view. That's different than saying I'm making, you know, movies with a message. Nobody wants a movie to preach to them. But all movies have certain moral content, and my faith certainly informs the moral content of mine.
Although there have been some movies that do a little preaching, sometimes it's not so thinly veiled, but nonetheless, not necessarily in the Christian realm either. But
oh yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, but nobody likes that. Even if the message of a preachy movie is one that you agree with, nobody likes having a movie preach at them. It's not why we see movies. It's not, you know, we go to church to hear a preacher. When you go to the movies, you really don't want to hear a filmmaker talking down to you or preaching at you about what you ought to think or what you ought to believe. Again, even if a point of view that you appreciate, usually it's not what makes for good storytelling or good movie experiences.
Director Scott Derrickson with us on Morning Air today. How did you get involved with Deliver Us from Evil?
Well, Jerry Bruckheimer first optioned the book. There was a book that I adapted. And that was in 2003, and it was a book of memoirs written by a guy named Ralph Sarchi, who he's retired now, but at the time he was an undercover cop working nights in the 4-6 precinct in the Bronx, which was the most violent crime precinct in the country at the time. The FBI called it the most dangerous square mile in America. So he's this hardcore undercover cop going out with a team of guys every night in what was called Special Ops Street Crime Division, basically stopping crimes in progress. So he was constantly, you know, getting in fights. He's been shot. I mean, he saw more evil in a week than most police officers will see in their career. And this guy also, through a series of cases, began to investigate paranormal occurrences in New York and ended up teaming up with a priest in New York and ultimately became an assistant to the authorized exorcist in New York. And that's all true. So I thought he was an amazing. I went and spent a week with him in 2003 and found him to be one of the most interesting people I'd ever met and thought that his story had the makings of a good movie.
So the thought in this area that it wasn't just a lot of random bad guys that happened to stumble into one another, but it truly was an evil place?
I mean, I think that he would say, you know, he would separate them between secondary evil and primary evil. That's what he talks about in the book, you know, secondary evil being the evil that men do, you know, the evil that he would witness on the streets, which was pretty horrific at times. But then primary evil being a spiritual evil, you know, that has to be confronted and combated in a different way. That's, you know, and it's interesting that he's a guy who's spent his years doing both.
And when does Deliver Us From Evil hit theaters?
Opens Wednesday, July 2nd, this Wednesday.
All right. Very good. Very good. And in the last minute or so here, any comments about your work with Doctor Strange?
Well, I can't say anything specific about it other than, you know, obviously it's the opportunity of a lifetime. And it is a comic book character that I love. And, you know, I worked hard to get the job, and the fact that I'm going to get to do it is a dream come true. It's pretty extraordinary. It's really, really very, very exciting.
Now, is there enough leeway to kind of, you know, shape him in the direction you'd like, or do you have to kind of stay true to historic comic book persona there?
Well, that's a process that's going to unfold as we go. You know, I can't say anything specific about the story or how it's going to be shaped or anything like that, just because with Marvel fans, you say one word and suddenly it's all over the internet and everybody's gossiping about it. So I've learned the hard way that I need to just say nothing.
All right. Well, very good. We look forward to Doctor Strange and also Deliver Us From Evil opening up on Wednesday already, the 2nd of
Wednesday.
July. Wednesday the 2nd. Yep. Hey, thanks a lot very much, Scott Derrickson, for being with us and for all your good work. Keep it up.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Talking movies this morning here. Scott Derrickson there and Vince Leo with us now, movie reviewer for Quipster.net, has had the pleasure or obligation to watch Transformers 4. Vince, if we had done an IQ test on you a couple weeks ago and then again today after having seen Transformers 4, would we have noticed any difference?
I don't see how you couldn't, because when you're talking about a 2-hour and 45-minute movie in which you have to actually shut your brain off, I mean, there's only if you actually have to shut your brain off for this length of time, you're probably going to kill a lot of brain cells in the process. And I don't know that I've fully recovered yet from the experience of Transformers: Age of Extinction. You know, Michael Bay has. You know, he just makes these really overblown action movies. You know, he's made Armageddon and Pearl Harbor and the Bad Boys movies and these really beautifully shot. I mean, his background is in, you know, music videos and commercials. And really, when you're watching his movies, they really feel, you know, from the textures and the way that he shoots. And it's almost like you're watching a very long commercial, because it's just so lush and he likes slow motion shots and he loves big explosions. Everything goes big. But the one thing that Michael Bay, it's pretty much through all his movies, is that they're written at a level that the youngest kid that can really understand to the oldest person in the country can understand, because they're just written at this level, I mean, like a second grade level or something like that. It's just really aims toward adolescents and younger in terms of the dialogue and its kind of outlook on society and just, you know, I call the Transformers movies, it's a special kind of movie. I call it a sandbox movie. And it reminds me of the days when I was younger and I used to play with action figures in the proverbial sandbox. It's just, you just take, you know, superheroes or robots or whatever, and you just smash them up, and, you know, you just construct these own scenarios in your mind. And that's what it feels. It feels like $200 million have gone to a director who still has this kind of sandbox, playing in the sandbox mentality, where it's just, you know, you take these robots and you have all this money to spend, and you just say, hey, this is cool. We're going to have, you know, hot cars, and they turn into robots. Well, that's great. And then we have dinosaur robots that can, you know, go from dinosaur to robot, you know, at a whim, and make them fight each other. And then we'll have a car that can turn into a giant robot samurai, and he's going to get involved. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of fun watching, I suppose, you know, that's the question. Is it a lot of fun watching somebody play with their own toys? I don't know. I mean, that's a very good question. 2 hours and 45 minutes. When you deal with something of that length, you expect this is going to be a very monumental book that got condensed into a 2 hour and 45 minute movie, because they, you know, you couldn't shoot it any less. But no, this is way overblown. This is there's literally like 20 to 25 minutes worth of story here that gets greatly expanded through, you know, basically just a lot of prolonged action scenes and a lot of comic dialogue and, you know, comic side characters that really don't add anything to the main story. So if you're somebody who goes to the movies to shut your brain off, to kind of, I mean, I guess there is an appeal there. This thing made $100 million and $200 million more worldwide, so it's already a big success. You know, I think that maybe there's something to the escapism of just, you know, being able to shut everything out for a while and just deal with explosions and stuff. But I don't know how it played through other parts of the country, but when I was sitting there in the screening that I saw, people were on their cell phone way more during this movie. I saw the light of people's cell phones much more than I've ever seen in any movie before. I think people just know they don't really have to pay attention to what's going on. You can, you know, I mentioned this in my review. You know, despite the fact that it's really long, back in the days when you had a movie this long, in old Hollywood days, they used to have an intermission where you could go out and, you know, for 15 minutes or whatever and go to the concession stand or just talk or whatever. This movie almost brings that back, because you could leave at any point in this film. If you just feel it's too long, you just want to stretch your legs, go walk around the block and come back, and you know what? You will not really be missing out on anything. You will just jump right back into it, because there's really not much plot. It's really so prolonged. And, it's just, you know, I feel like I'm not even talking about
it. You know, if it's
movie.
The sandbox here, you'd kind of, the average kid would have, given up on the toys and gone in the house for a juice box by now. Right?
Yeah, you know, I know that there's a lot of nostalgia especially for 1980s toys and things like that. And I don't understand, you know, I understand that, you know, people want to see their childhood toys, you know, brought back, and then it kind of brings back memories of their youth. But I don't really understand, if you were to watch this movie independent of knowing that this was a its own franchise of sorts, a toy franchise and also cartoons on TV, and you watch this movie, it would make really no sense. It just, I don't understand how watching a robot, a giant robot, a car that can turn into a robot, riding a dinosaur that can turn into a robot, is something that should make you really cheer in and of itself. It's just only because people remember playing with Dinobots when they were kids. And, you know, part of the other problem that I have with this movie is that they spend all this money on this movie, and they know that it's going to make $1 billion worldwide, and yet they inject so many commercials into it. You know, a lot of movies, you expect product placement. You see, you know, name brand clothes and cars and things like that. You know, James Bond movies are full of, you know, products that you end up seeing, and it becomes kind of a commercial in and of itself. But this movie, is going to make $1 billion, I mean, there's no reason why it needs to have so many commercials. I mean, there's a demonstration by Stanley Tucci plays the CEO of this tech corporation, and he's displaying this this substance called transformium, which you can basically literally transform into anything. And so they're going to use this transformium to make their own robots and to battle, you know, the remainder of the Autobots and Decepticons that are left on Earth. And one of the first thing he demonstrates is this speaker, which is a name brand speaker. I wouldn't even dignify it by just giving it more airplane, telling you what it is, but it's a name brand Bluetooth speaker. And that's one of the things that he demonstrates. And then later on in the film, there's a one of the spaceships crashes into a beer truck, and which you see all kinds of bottles of the same beer laying all around. And I'm wondering, I'm like, is somebody going to pick this up and actually drink it and go, ah, or something? And sure enough, Mark Wahlberg picks up one of the bottles for no apparent reason, opens it, drinks it, and then throws it, and it's only for this big commercial. And that's why I say that, you know, the background of Michael Bay is in commercials, and this is one long commercial for Transformers, for whatever products want to get put in. And it's also marketed, you know, a lot of big movies today have an eye toward the world market, especially China, which is, you know, opened up to a lot of American movies and has caused a lot of movies to get rewritten because they may have had anti-Chinese or been against something that would affect China in terms of the world economy or something like that. There is no reason for this film to spend so much time in Shanghai and also Hong Kong, and there's all kinds of products that are in this film that are, you know, American audiences won't recognize it, but, you know, basically there's more product placement for Chinese audiences than even American audiences in this film. And there's actors that are in this film in order to appeal to the Chinese audience. And in one particular scene, they're in an elevator, and there is a guy standing in the background of the elevator watching two people fight. Eventually, he just stands there the whole time. Eventually, he gets involved for a few seconds, and then you never hear from him again. Apparently, the guy that's in the film is a famous Chinese boxer that Chinese, you know, audiences will totally recognize, but it makes no sense for the United States audience. And so you just wonder, you know, everything that's in this film is meant to be marketed. And so it's easily consumed, it's completely forgotten, and there's four of these movies, and, you know, it's just not going to stop anytime soon, because the people are still paying money to go see, I guess, the idea of the spectacle, or, you know, maybe there's this thirst for watching things blow up or watching buildings fall down, or it's just week after week you get a lot of this. And I don't know. I guess somebody else would have to. I'd like to find somebody who really loves these movies to really find out what is it that you get out of this. And one of the peeves that I have as a movie reviewer and just a movie lover in general is that people will say, you know, and when I write a review and I basically lambaste it, you know, it's just a movie. You know, why do you care? It's just a movie. You know, you just enjoy it for what it is. And, you know, I say, if you really love movies or any kind of art, love books or love, you know, television or whatever, you should say, why not? Why not put more effort into, if you're going to spend this kind of money and there's going to be thousands of people working on this, and they know that a million or a billion people in the world are going to be viewing this, and they're going to spend 3 hours of their life, and I'm not sure how much it costs for, you know, the average family to go see this. I'm sure it's a lot of money, including, you know, travel and concession stand. Why not put some effort into it? Why not try, if you're going to spend that kind of money, to put, give us something that we can take with us.
All right, I'm guessing about 3, 4, 5 thumbs down for Transformers. Hey, Vince, thanks a lot for your input this morning. Vince Leo, find out more at Quipster.net. Some movie reviews for you at Quipster.net. That'll wrap it up for this portion. Much more to come as Morning Air continues. Look at the news next, and a whole lot more on the way here at Relevant Radio.
Thanks for listening to this hour of Morning Air on listener-supported Relevant Radio. For information on guests and topics, go to relevantradio.com and enter keyword Morning Air. That's relevantradio.com, keyword Morning Air.